Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. And this episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Kutsi, Kwikwetlem, and Stalo First Nations. And Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship, as we would not be able to make this program without their caretaking of these lands and their leadership and guidance in creating really anything considered creative on these lands. My name is Leslie. Today is going to be an interesting episode, mostly because it's one of those where, like, I will have actually multiple topics of discussion. One of them is a special announcement on a project that I've got coming up for Typically Tuesdays. And it would be very good if you stick to the end of the program to hear all about it. And the first topic of discussion is actually one that I've been meaning to cover for several months already, actually. I even prepared the playlist for this episode months ago, but just in lieu of other things, haven't had the chance to do this episode. But here we go. It's going to be about sapphic period dramas as a certified lesbian. You want to know my opinion, I'm sure. So get ready today. For the playlist, this is, again, it's like 3 months old. So there's not a whole lot of, like, super fresh, super, super duper new music here. But it's all by sapphics, I think. The most, if not all of them, are by people who are not cis men who love women. And also, if you listen closely to the trajectory of the playlist, you're gonna feel some things, mostly sad things, because I've accidentally structured it so that it's actually quite a heartbreaking playlist. But we'll get through it. We'll get through it. It'll be fine. It'll be fun. It'll be good as well, I think. Plenty of CanCon on this playlist. We've got genres from a little bit of everything. We got a little bit of funk. We've got some indie rock coming up soon. We've got some sad R&B. Here's the first track from noted boy genius. This is one of my favorite songs from Lucy Dacus. It's called Kissing Lessons. Enjoy on this sapphic period dramas special of Typically Tuesdays here on 90.1 FM. Rachel was a year older when I was in the second grade. I thought she might know everything. I took a word like a golden ring. I asked her how to win Lockman, and she said, I know just the thing. Give me lip gloss and a hair tie. By the name of a crush, I couldn't decide if she was.
She took my spot in the bed, the space in your head that I used to. Something about her changes my mood, the sweetest perfume, she's too good for you.
Get your high bar, she's a Denny girl and now you love it. This is Bird Note. This young northern flicker is calling from the ground. Sound like trouble? Well, just because a young bird is on the ground doesn't necessarily mean it's sick or injured. At this time of year, juvenile northern flickers are leaving their nests. They fledge when they're 3 or 4 weeks old and almost as big as their parents, 11 or 12 inches long. Although you may picture a woodpecker high on a tree trunk, northern flickers, young and old, actually forage mostly on the ground. So this young flicker, just out of its nest, is poking around in the dirt and leaf litter, looking for ants and other insects. It makes test flights and, day by day, reaches higher and higher into the trees. But you'll still see it regularly, beak down in your lawn, probing for food. The best thing you can do for the young flicker, and other fledgling birds too, is to give the bird some space. And especially, keep your cats indoors. Next spring, this bird will probably be drumming on your roof, advertising for a mate. To learn what to do if you do find a sick or injured bird, visit our website, birdnote.org. We'll help you find your local wildlife rehabilitator. I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
You just heard Hot Pockets by Callie Sway. Before that, you heard I Think I Like Your Girlfriend by Nia Naturata here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. Yeah, the first part of this playlist today is like really physical, you know, it's all about making out. It's all about making out as a sapphic. But trust me, strap in, because the playlist is going to take a turn very soon. And it is going to be sad, so have fun. Talking about sapphic period films today on the program. So here's what it is, right? Like, I don't love watching movies. You really have to convince me to watch a movie. And I have wasted time watching movies before. One of my favorite movies, however, is The Handmaiden. It is such a favorite of mine that it even appears on my Letterboxd as one of my top four, okay? I am not kidding around when it comes to 2017's The Handmaiden, directed by Park Chan-wook. It is one of the best, and it also kind of is a sapphic period drama. I think like the past few years I've started to watch more movies, and a few months ago I ended up watching A World to Come and also Ammonite. These two are also sapphic period dramas, and they are also the inspiration of today's episode, which is mostly a rant about sapphic period dramas, because I hated those movies so much. I really disliked them. If you're not familiar with what a sapphic period drama is, it's kind of in the name, but if you're still not convinced that it's about women who fall in love with women during a period of history and there is drama, I encourage you to watch this one SNL sketch. I don't exactly know what it's called, but if you look up SNL lesbian period drama, watch it, and congratulations, you've watched pretty much every single sapphic period drama of the North Americas and of Western Europe ever to be created. It's fun. It's an easy watch. It covers everything. Such as longing gazes, women wearing their hair in buns, hands, so many hands, so much hands, being by the ocean side, white people, And also, how to say this in a radio-friendly way, depictions of intimacy so hardcore that they appear to essentially almost be softcore pornography. So yeah, that's kind of the summary of a lot of these movies. And I wish I could say something nice about them, something additional that's nice about them. The one thing that I will say, which is going to be the focus of today's episode, is that I've noticed that a lot of these movies like to be avenues in which people explore ideas about the social and economic oppression of women, and also the sexual oppression of women. The sexual oppression of women mostly being about desire, right? And being sexually repressed. And I think these are important things to explore in art. And because of how complicated they are and big brain they are, like, yeah, like, it is a feat to try to discuss them. And whether you like it or not, these issues continue to be seen in the lives of women in the year of our supposed 2024, even in the most privileged people. Like, you can see echoes of that if you're not seeing the oppression plain on paper, right? My issue is that a lot of sapphic period pieces, in my opinion, okay? Let me get in on this. In my opinion, I think they do it really boringly and really cliche and unimaginative, and it sucks, and it feels like I've wasted 2.5 hours of my day watching these movies that are telling me nothing that I already don't know, and possibly also portraying women really poorly. We're going to talk about that today on the program. Strap in, stay tuned. Here is some music, then this is, oh yeah, we're going into the sad hour. This is Must Have Been a Fool by Pentile.
Oh,
Father of My Children by Black Belt Eagle Scout here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. Didn't I tell you that this playlist was going to take a turn? This is a playlist about sapphic love songs. If, you know, it started out with like, ooh, kissy, flirty, making out with my girlfriend and or the person that I've developed a crush on who is possibly a friend. And now it's gotten sad. More of that to come. And it's going to take an even harder turn, I think, later on this playlist. So stay tuned for that. And also stay tuned, actually, because I do have like an exciting, important announcement to make about Typically Tuesdays. It's a project that I've got coming up very soon. And it would be great. It would be totally great. Like, thank you so much if you could stick around to hear about that as well, because I could really use your help in making it happen. So please stay tuned. That being said, okay, these sapphic period dramas, right? I'm going to spoil the movies. I'm going to spoil Ammonite. I'm going to spoil A World to Come. And I'm going to spoil The Handmaiden. Strap in, because here we go. I did not like A World to Come. And here's the thing, okay, like many of these movies, intentionally or not, they're saying something about gender. They're saying something about being a woman during these like kind of like Victorian periods of time. To take a deep breath so that I can get into it. A World to Come is not a movie that I would recommend to people. And this is the reason why. So it depicts a romance between, I guess, like two neighbors, I guess, whose husbands are either like constantly away doing work or being general menaces to society. And these women, they basically fall in love with each other. And at the end, one of the women is killed by her husband, or implied to be, I guess, but it's very strongly hinted. The movie wants to talk about people, women, and how they are unable to pursue certain things. The excitement of the world to come is that, you know, when these two people were in this affirming and gentle relationship with each other, anything felt possible because it was kind of like away from the rest of the world, the patriarchal world. And of course, that is snatched away when the patriarchy comes in, right? I've heard this story before, because I'm a woman in society. This movie is a barrier gaze movie, and it's not as though I think that like barrier gaze is like a trope that we should never touch ever or something like that. Like, I think like if it can be justified in the movie and presented in a way that is thought-provoking and, I don't know, new and interesting, then yeah, obviously, like, some stories we need to bury gaze, sorry. But there, that doesn't exist in A World to Come. We see the suffering of these women constantly, and we know that something bad is going to happen at the end. I feel that especially as a queer woman, I think, and viscerally just as a woman in general. When I say that, like, this movie feels kind of boring to me, it's because I don't need to watch a movie to know about the pain of being oppressed as a woman, right? And I didn't feel like I was learning anything new or getting like a fresh, interesting story from it. There's this incredible quote by cultural commentator Matt Berenstein, who hosts a podcast called A Bit Fruity. And I think at some point he says something like, what do we gain and what do we lose when we define queerness by suffering? I want to pose that question to the creators of A World to Come. And if you watch this movie, you'll understand what I'm saying, because that is exactly what they're trying to go for. The depiction of women suffering. What do we gain and lose when we have seen this played out time and time again in our lives, time and time again? I assume perhaps that some people who may not, perhaps maybe if they have not had such intimate looks into violent interpersonal relationships, that maybe they will find this movie enlightening. I personally did not. And the way that it was told to be just so slow, and how it ended, the way that it was told to be so predictable and so slow, and how it ended, makes me feel like this is not a movie worth recommending to people. I'm sorry, but that's just the truth. So it felt boring. And so the other movie, right? Ammonite, the one other movie that inspired me to make today's episode, I think it also wants to say something about gender through this like sapphic period piece medium, story medium. But I really wonder what it is trying to say, because it makes me confused. So, it's quite boring as well, in my opinion. It just, like, falls, like, headfirst into the common sapphic period drama tropes, as discussed earlier. And it is a historical fiction telling of the life of Mary Anning and her fictionalized romance tryst with geologist Charlotte Murchison. These two were real people. Anning is very famously a paleontologist, was a paleontologist, and also like really, really overlooked and underappreciated by the geology community because of sexism. And Murchison was a geologist as well. Murchison actually in real life is 50 years Mary Anning's senior, and I'm not exactly sure based on the research that I've done that they actually met. But here's what happens in the movie. Kate Winslet plays Mary Anning. Saoirse Ronan plays Charlotte Murchison, and she is a whittle baby girl in this movie. I don't even recall if the movie discusses Murchison's own accomplishments as a geologist. And that makes me upset, because this movie was marketed pretty hard, I believe. If I recall correctly, it was marketed pretty hard as like, this is Mary Anning's story. Look at this incredible female paleontologist who's been overlooked her entire life and like ended up living in poverty because of how she was overlooked, etc. And it has the opportunity to also highlight Murchison's own work and doesn't, and instead makes And it's about this hot, steamy romance between these two women who possibly never met each other, possibly did, definitely did not have the same age thing happening, because again, Murchison was 50 years older than Anning in real life. And also, like, okay, you watch the movie, you tell me, okay? Do you think Charlotte Murchison is played like a whittle baby girl in this movie? I'm really not trying to belittle Saoirse Ronan's performance or anything like that. Like, it's a really good performance, but as well, I find it a little bit disturbing because I thought, I was under the impression that this was about Mary Anning. And appreciating Mary Anning, I didn't think that it was going to take this, in my opinion, also pretty sexist turn to infantilize Murchison and turn her into this, like, really frail, sick, young woman who, I mean, her accomplishments aren't even discussed at all. It's just like she's rich and she's hot because she's Saoirse Ronan. I mean, come on. I don't know. I don't know if I have anything more to say about these two movies, to be honest. Maybe I'll say something about The Handmaiden. I think you should watch The Handmaiden. Just, yeah. And stick around for the announcement. More music. Here is Stay Away by Muna.
If I see my old friends, we'll go out dancing. If we go out dancing, then we'll go to the bar. If we go to the bar, then there's gonna be drinking. If I drink, I wanna see where you are. So I don't see my old friends, I don't go dancing. I don't do most things I used to do. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I did most things to get to you. No one ever told me. Then I play a song. If I play a song, then I think I'll lose it. In the world, I bet the fun of you long. So I don't go driving, no, I just stay in. I don't do most things I used to do. Cause every moment is a fork in the road, and all my roads lead back to you. Thinking, I think of the time when you said that you loved me. You said I was perfect. You said you were sorry. You said you were selfish. If I don't stop it before I know it, all the bad things never happen. You never lied or treated me bad. And if you did, then you wish you hadn't. Stop believing you were right. And I was being too dramatic. So I gotta leave the light on for tonight. Just so I can stay. I
wait for a moment, I try. You were living soft in my mind. I'm coming back to this. I'm coming back to it. We speak both the same words, and you arise just when I fall. You give a little more, I give a little.
She said
she likes long hair. I wish I never cut it.
She said
she knows where I can make a lot of money.
Situation before you talk, it's hard to ignore. I'm getting lost in this, lost in you. Hope it's not just simple words when your eyes are on me, but I'm out the door. You give me enough, just enough.
She said
she likes long hair. I wish I never could. She knows where I can make a lot of money. If I worked up myself, I'd come running. But I'm still here, same spot, never moved the muscle. Never cut it.
She said
she knows where I can make a lot of money.
The familiar birds of the present are the direct descendants of dinosaurs. But there's another group of animals that you might say looks pretty prehistoric, and that's the crocodilians. Crocodiles and their relatives, like this American alligator. Crocs are the closest living relatives of birds. The ancestors of all crocodiles split off from the dinosaur group about 250 million years ago. Dinosaurs diversified into all kinds of lifestyles, herbivores and predators, big and lumbering, small and nimble. Crocodilians diversified too. There were ocean-dwelling crocs, and there were ones that ran around on two legs, like some well-known dinosaurs. But mass extinction events hit the crocodilians hard. These days, crocs are scaly, short-legged, and ambush their prey from shallow water. They don't share many of the unique adaptation of birds, like feathers and impressive vocal abilities. That said, gators definitely know how to growl. It's a far cry from the dee-dee-dee of a chickadee. But both voices carry on the legacy of ancestors that lived long, long ago. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rebel.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. You just heard Katie Tupper with She Said. My name is Leslie. Final minutes here of the show, and I really have to briefly just talk about The Handmaiden before moving on from this topic of discussion. So The Handmaiden is one of my favorite movies ever. I think everyone should watch it, obviously, if they can stomach it, of course. It is directed by Park Chan-wook, and if you know Park Chan-wook movies, you know that they can often be quite disturbing and gross. And The Handmaiden is no different. It's quite disturbing and gross. And I would even find it kind of hard, I would find it myself hard-pressed to say that it's technically a sapphic period drama. I think it's more accurately described as a psychosexual decolonial thriller. And what's funny about that is that Park Chan-wook, as I believe he's spoken before, that he didn't want to make a movie about women's rights and like about queer rights or anything. Like, he's just trying to make a movie about people living in a colonial era, having to survive in the ways that they had to survive, and the shady and bad people who lived during that time. And without spoiling too much of it, because I want you to watch this movie, but I do think you would benefit from reading a summary first, because it is quite disturbing. What it does so well that Ammonite and A World to Come can't do, and what I'm sure a lot of other, unfortunately, sapphic period films can't do, is that it depicts women who feel liberated in pursuing their desires in their lives and things like that, right? And being kind of free in some ways of oppressive patriarchal systems. And it also depicts, you know, how those patriarchal systems oppress them. But then it says, what if in order to pursue this joy and feeling of liberation, what if in an act to preserve the sense of joy and to pursue the love that you know that you deserve, you fought back, you resisted, even if it meant doing things that were not respectable and not conforming, and maybe even kind of, you know, ethically, like kind of, like morally questionable, like ethically questionable. And so in that sense, I think that's why I enjoy The Handmaiden so much more compared to these two other movies. And I'm sure compared to a lot of other sapphic period dramas that decide to take the same lane as Ammonite and A World to Come, is that The Handmaiden is actually very... It forces us to imagine a different world, right? It forces us to imagine a world in which, like, resistance prevails and hashtag love wins, instead of a world in which we're so confined to the systems of oppression that make women, like, shrink and force them to become smaller, that sometimes the story itself is, one, boring as heck, and two, we are babifying Charlotte frickin' Murchison. Just some thoughts, you know? And so, exciting news. We've come to the portion of the episode where I announce this, like, special program that I really need, actually, your help in putting together. So this is going to... This is what it is. On Monday, August 5th, which is the Monday right after the Vancouver Pride Parade this year, I'm going to be doing a program that highlights how queer people build bridges of solidarity within our communities and with other communities. And I can't do that without you, because this is going to be a listener engagement project. Listen, this Friday, June 28th, is going to mark the 55th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprisings. And it's a really important event because I think that obviously it is kind of like canonized to be the queer civil rights event, even though it was not the only one. But I think what's more important than all the mythologizing around it and the canonization around it is that we remember and we preserve the fact that Stonewall was an act of queer resistance against larger structures of oppression. An outright act of resistance against police brutality, homophobia and transphobia, exploitation. I think a lot of us queers, I'm talking to you, but like other people in general as well, actually, come sit in on this conversation. I think a lot of us really believe that, like, since those 55 years, like, in general, since the civil rights movement, we've made great strides in society. Like, think about the 60s and the 70s, right? Oh, you've got the civil rights movement, you've got the gay lib movement, you've got the women's lib movement, you've got anti-war movements, and we're doing really good. But the way I see it, in all of my nuances and things that make me, I don't know if I fully agree with that. I think there are a lot of global crises that are happening, and there's also a lot of moral panic happening from bigots, and that actually things are really bad right now. Things are really, really bad, and I can list them off. Here are just a short few, you know, increased police brutality, despite important and poignant conversations about defunding the police since the refocusing on Black Lives Matter in 2020. So there has been an exponential increase of police brutality pretty much across the board. Then, of course, there is also human-made climate crises and Western imperialism and war that is forcibly displacing people from the global south. And at the same time, global north powers are also doubling down on anti-immigration policies, including in Canada. And then, of course, you know, people of our own communities, right? Our own LGBTQ pluses, the bodily rights and autonomy of trans people to access medically, like gender-affirming medical care, and to just be addressed by the name they want to be addressed and the pronouns that they want to be addressed in, like those rights being taken away. Rights being taken away from literal queer children. I mean, this is not news. Things are really bad right now. And we are going to be forced to celebrate Pride in a way that benefits only capitalists and the state. And so for the August 5th episode, I mean, it's, you know, intentionally right after the Vancouver Pride Parade, I want to highlight you by showing people that, like, actually, we have been celebrating Pride in a lot of other ways by refusing to be complicit, by building these bridges of solidarity with others. And here's how we do it. And here's how we, you know, plant seeds of hope in this kind of bleak feeling future. And I really need your help to do that. If you have 10 or 15 minutes to spare, There's a link in my Instagram bio. You can find me on Instagram at Typically Tuesdays. And it takes you to a form that just asks you some very basic questions, like your name and how you are showing solidarity with other LGBTQ plus people and or two-spirit people, and how you are building bridges of solidarity with other oppressed groups and people. And if you are not LGBTQ plus nor two-spirit, you can really help me out by sharing this episode and this project with your LGBTQ plus and or two-spirit loved ones and encouraging them to participate in it. It'd be of great, great help to me. And yeah, I'm putting the ball in your court. I really ask you for this favor. Thanks so much for tuning in to Typically Tuesdays. Whew, what a gay episode here on 90.1 FM CJSF. Tune into more great CJSF programming by checking out Intravenous, as we were talking about gender and society all day today. Wednesdays from 10 to 11 with your host Robin. It's a great program. I love checking it out whenever I get the chance. I'm sure you'll like it too if you like today's episode. One final song on this sad sapphic playlist today, and it's gonna be by Charlotte Day Wilson. This is a good one, even though it's kind of sad. It's Keep Moving, and I hope you enjoy. I'll talk to you very soon.
The wind embraces you in ways I wish I could. Around the bending up your firewood. Oh, the time comes, the time it always comes too soon. I wish that I could slow it down with you. I wish that I could fall.